Hello?
Anybody? Hola. Is anybody there?
Yep.
I can hear something. This is Sapio Paz.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Bars, the Black Atheist Radio Show. I am Rashad Blazer Pete, and joining me this evening is Sapio Paz. She is also a co-host of the show, Dating Human. And with us today as well is Deanna Adams, author of the blog Musings on a Limb.
Hello.
Hello, good evening.
How you doing? Thank you for having
good,
me.
Good, you?
Pretty good, pretty good. What else we got here? I've never done this format before.
Looks like we just lost the end. So, Sapio, why have you? What are some of your experiences that you may have had recently with Massage Noir?
Recently?
She's like, that's a lot.
Well, I don't know. Well, most recently, the reason why I didn't have a podcast this week is because my host had kind of a meltdown over a subject of, we were discussing feminism. Actually, we were just discussing comedy and comedians, stand-up comedians, and you know, I was just noticing how when we talk about comedians and we're talking about women that are comedians, they're always titled the female comedian instead of just a comedian, whereas men are referred to as a comedian, and women are only referred to generally as a female comedian. It's always pointed out that she has a vagina,
right,
or she identifies as female or whatever. Or if it was a trans comedian, it would be a trans comedian. It wouldn't just be a comedian, you know? And, you know, it's like, that. So anyway, that subject, we were discussing it, and he had to go in and, like, bring it to play, like, devil's advocate or something, and, you know, was talking about his experience in the entertainment industry. And, you know, and I shut him down right away because he was doing an appeal to authority, you know, fallacy, basically. And it really didn't have any bearing on the subject. You know, it was just, I just made an observation. I wasn't debating anything. But, you know, and then I wouldn't let it go. And he kept saying, well, that wasn't what I was saying. I was like, well, then why did you bring up your professional opinion on it? Why did you mention that? And he just wouldn't, he didn't see any problem with what he did. And, you know, I didn't want to go past that until he understood what happened in that situation, because that's what we have to deal with all the time. We bring up something that affects us. Every profession that we have, it's our profession, you know, plus our pronoun in front of it. You're a female astronaut, you're a female banker, you're a female CEO, you're a female this, you're a female that, you're not, you know, you're not the norm. And that's something us women deal with all the time, and it's part of the problem. It's part of deconstructing the patriarchy is to identify those things and point them out, and you know, hopefully that can change. But only if you are seeing it for what it is. If you're denying that it happens or you're making excuses for it, you're not listening and you're not learning, you know? Hello?
I'm here.
Hello?
I'm this.
Yeah.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Hey, I'm Deanna.
Hey, Deanna.
Sorry about the technical difficulties. Who's all? What? I heard the tail end of what you were talking about with basically our profession and our pronoun. So can we kind of recap?
Yeah, I was just talking about a recent issue I had with a very close supposed male ally, and a very simple subject came up that it just, it was, you know, it turned into an argument and a big fight, because he was insisting that, you know, his experience in the entertainment industry, which wasn't in comedy at all, but whatever, his experience knowing booking people who do bookings, gave him some kind of insight that he needed to educate me on when I was bringing up the fact about, you know, just observing, just making a complaint, just, you know, talking about the fact that that's fucked up, you know. And so he had to, of course, come up with a fucking solution that, you know, an explanation for why it was and the solution when we already know why it is. I didn't need him to tell me that, you know.
Right. The mansplaining, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So and then he didn't see what he did wrong in that conversation, even though I'm very clear when I'm telling you what I don't like. Nobody has ever accused me of being vague. but it turned out that he just didn't like the fact that I was constantly pointing out this stuff to him. I think it got to a boiling point, like he just couldn't deal with it anymore. And then he kind of went like berserk. I don't know. So, and that's that fragility. So once you point out something and you don't back down on your point because it's something you live and they don't. And, you know, they want to keep insisting that they have some kind of insight onto this, or, you know, they're going to explain away something or make us feel better by their explanation. You know, it's just misplaced, you know, thinking, you know, misplaced allies. You're not allying. You're just being in the way and making noise.
Right,
and there are times
right.
when you just need to say, you know, like, that. I could have said that, and he could have been like, yeah, that's fucked up. Yeah, the booking industry, they don't book women, they don't do this, and this is why it is. Like, he could have used his expertise to, you know, be an ally, to be supportive in that, but he chose to use it to be adversarial. So,
yeah,
I don't say that.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate
yeah.
because a lot of times people like that think that they're helping, you know, and
yeah.
you have to, I usually will give a person one, you know, kind of one explanation if I'm feeling generous that day. And I'll say, you know what, look, you're not helping with this. I understand the things that you're talking about. I've already thought about those things. I've already
right.
dealt with
exactly.
those things, but yeah, you and I both know what this is, and either we're going to be honest about it and we're going to deal with it and try to find some solutions, or we're not going to talk about this right now because I don't need to be pat on the head, and I don't need,
yeah.
you know, it's just this, I don't need the mansplaining. Either, you know, help me figure out a way around it or let me go do it myself. That's pretty much how this
right.
is going to go.
Right.
So,
well, I mean, the second part to this is, I told him, I was like, you need to go home and think about this, and we need to stop talking about this because it's really starting to piss me off. And so he leaves, and then he comes back like 2 minutes later, and he's like, I just have something to say. And I was like, okay. And then he was like, well, you need to start thinking about our podcast as a business or a blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, wait, what? We had a discussion about feminism, and I sent you home to think about it, and you coming in here, and you're going to try to act like, you know, you're going to slam your dick on the fucking table and act like this is some kind of power play. Like, no, you go home and think about the argument. Don't make it about anything else. Nothing else is going on. Just think about that, and then blah, blah, blah. So he left, and then it just went downhill from there. And the problem was, it was the fragility. It was he didn't want to be wrong, and he wanted to feel empowered over me. He felt like powerless, I guess, because I would not let him continue with his mansplaining and telling me what is what with feminism and with the issue that we deal with all the time in professions. And so he made it all about this, and he, you know, pulled all of the punches and made ultimatums and everything and just went way out, into left field, and it didn't even have to go there. Like, I'd already bought him Christmas present, you know, it wasn't all that serious, but he made it that serious. And then I just was like, all right, you showed who you were. I'm done. That's it. I thought we were friends, but you wanted to make this into something because of one argument that you felt, you know, that you felt emasculated for some reason. That's your choice. But, you know, of course, in the conversation that ensued, he tried to make it me being the one who did that. So, I mean, like, somebody got some dogs.
Yeah, somebody else must be on the line because I don't have any.
My dogs are asleep. I fed them right before, so they'd be full. but what I'm saying, so, like, when you have these situations and then they get compounded because of the male fragility in dealing with this and being, you know, and I really think it comes from a place where it's like white people and racism, right? Like, they don't want to, it's so terrible to them. Like, they don't want to believe that it exists, you know? And so they'll make
right.
up, you know, they'll try to protect that because it's so raw for them. And they understand that it's fucked up, but what they do is they go right to denial, you know? And so then they just have this permanent veil over their eyes where they can't see it. Even when we're telling them they can't see it, you know, it's there. And we give them examples of it's there. They still want to believe that it's not always that problem, you know? And it's the same mm-hmm. thing for men.
Definitely. I mean, in the right. parallels, once everybody is on the line, you know, we'll definitely probably go back and kind of recap a little bit. But the parallels in what you just said were between misogyny and misogynoir and racism is just so stark, because you can tell a black man about misogyny and he'll, you know, not everyone, obviously, but a lot of times you'll get, well, we have it hard out here too. Well, why are you talking about this? And they don't understand that the exact same things that they're saying to us when we're explaining these issues is the exact same thing they complain about white people saying to them when they talk about their troubles as being a black man. And
exactly.
And so how do you not see those parallels? You know, I would never walk up to a man and say, you have no problems, you know, or anything like that.
Yeah.
But you can tell me, oh, you went to college, so you don't have as many problems as black men do, or you know, deal with this, so you don't have as many issues. But then if a white person were to walk up to them and say, hey, you went to college, and so, you know, everything's okay, we don't
right.
need affirmative action anymore, they would lose
right,
their
right.
shit. You know, they would say,
mm-hmm.
what, this is wrong, and how can you, we're still dealing with A, B, C, D, and E, and it's like, okay, that's the same thing that we're telling you as women. We've made strides.
Right.
We've definitely made strides, but we're still dealing with a whole host of things, and a lot of them are emotional, physical, mental, societal, economic. I mean, all of those things.
Somebody got to put down that dog.
Yeah. Did
crazy.
Someone else just join the call? Who's all here?
Well,
you better.
Heather and Khalil are here.
Hello.
I wanted to also interject. Hi, how you guys doing?
Hello.
I wanted to interject. Just, I don't want us to get caught up in the having to say the not all men type of deal, because there are men who, yes, we know that don't try to go against the grain of patriarchy, but the reality is that the system that we live in, and so until there is a major shift, just like with racism, I don't believe that we need to give out ally cookies
uh-huh.
for being a decent human being and recognizing that women are autonomous humans, that we aren't, here to be lorded over. So I don't want us to get caught up into that. I want to say that early in the show so that we're not excusing ourselves for us telling our truth about what it is that we experience as black people as well as women. That's what we're not understanding. That's one of the definitions. That's the definition of misogynoir. It's where misogyny and race intersect, where as a black woman, my experience is different than that of what a white woman would experience, because my race
right.
also comes into play. So
right.
we don't want to excuse those men who don't subscribe to these ideals. They know who they are. They don't need pats on the back.
I don't even give out ally cookies for fucking allies, because I don't believe in allies personally. I just don't. I believe ally is a verb and a verb only. It is not an adjective. It is not your title. You don't get a card that you get to keep in your pocket. When you ally, is you seeing something and saying something. And being part of the solution. but you're not an ally. You know what I'm saying? It's like, mm-hmm. I feel like our, you know, in all of these different oppressions and all of these different struggles, allies are taking on this title, like, you know, acting, it's just like, you know what, chill, just do your part. You don't need to, to have a title.
Like a little bad woman.
Yeah, and I'm just sick of hearing it. Mm-hmm. And because every time, like, I can say about 10 people that fell off the map, off my Facebook feed, who were, you know, sworn allies and went hard on Facebook groups and all that bullshit. And then when they got called to task and they got called out on something, they did exactly the same damn thing as all the people that they were pointing at fingers at before. So it's the same with my co-host. So Like, I'm not jaded. I'm just observant. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Well, I threw out,
you know, that,
but not
and
all
that's
men
something
at
else
first,
that I think we
disclaimer.
Have to defend when we're actually passionate about something, or, you know, we actually are, you know, sharing something that, you know, was uncomfortable to us. The fact that we have to try to dissuade this, image of the angry black woman. We can't be upset. We can't be hurt. We can't be affected. Look, we have to always try to be gentle, because anything casts a whisper, we're, you know, screaming someone down or something, you know. So we don't have to apologize for being angry or feeling some kind of way about anything either. That's something that us as a people, as black people in general, that we have to try to stop apologizing for.
Exactly. All of us got to stop that.
Right. And that actually feeds definitely right into the part of the topics that we were talking about today, the first part of the double-edged sword, if you will, of misogynoir, is the strong black woman archetype. You know, it's, you're a strong black woman. You can handle this. You can do this. We've done this for years and years and years. And that's detrimental in and of itself, because it basically demands that we be superhuman. You know, like Heather was saying, we can't feel anything. We can't hurt. Mm-hmm. We can't be, you know, vulnerable or anything like that. But what that also does mentally, you know, it's detrimental, but it also absolves other people from responsibility for us. You know, so we don't have those protectors, because we can handle it.
Yeah, and that's why we get tone police the most. You know,
absolutely.
I had my own cousin on Facebook. We were talking about The Wiz, and I had, you know, mentioned some stuff to her about, because she's a performer, and she's been on, you know, in plays and stuff like that. And, you know, we're talking about monkeys, the flying monkeys and the trees, and she said that those people, they were never credited, you know, because I was like, there were no black people in The Wizard of Oz. She was like, we don't know that for sure. Because the flying monkeys, no, they weren't credited. So I'll let that sink in for a minute.
Where is she going with this one?
You know, and so I was like, well, that's some fucked up shit. And then I, you know, we talked on it. And then she was like, well, I agree with what you're saying, but I don't like your tone. I was like, how'd that work, though? How'd that work? How am I supposed to say that? So that you like my tone, but it's still true. Whatever.
Right, and it automatically assumes that we have an attitude, you know, a negative attitude, if we have to be specific. We can just be speaking our truth. Oh, why do you have to be so angry? What? I thought I was just answering your question. You know, what are you... I had a
conversation fucked up,
on
that's
Facebook
why.
earlier. Yeah, you know, I had a conversation on Facebook earlier today where the guy was asking about, you know, tithing, and one of my friends posted about tithing and how it's basically a scam. And I said, you know, yeah, and even as a former Christian who used to tithe and things like that, you know, even if you're still Christian, which that's a whole other show, but even if you are, the scriptures that they take about tithing and things like that was never meant to be your money. It was, you know, a part of the crops or whatever so that everybody could eat. And so, yeah, it is a scam. And the very next response was, well, I was just asking a question. And, you know, I didn't know if that was directed to me or not directed to me at that particular moment, but I said, I thought I was answering you in my nice typeface, you know?
Right.
I
was being nice to you.
Yeah, I wasn't mad or anything. And that we have to deal with that. It's like if someone sees our face, they automatically assume that when we challenge them, so to speak, we're doing it negatively, we have this attitude, we're so angry, we're so this and we're so that. And like Heather was saying, if we are angry, that's fine. We have a right to be angry. But at the
yep.
same time,
mm-hmm.
it's rude to just assume, you know, oh, well, now you're jumping down my throat. No, I'm not. I'm just talking to you. You know, what? I don't know what to do here.
You know, stereotypes, people don't really understand the, you know, there are real consequences to different stereotypes. And the stereotype of the angry black woman kind of makes it where it perceives us in so many different areas. When we're going for work, we'll be interviewing
uh-huh.
with people, and we have to have to code switch. We have to speak in our non-threatening falsetto voice so that we, you know, so as not to upset massa, you know, because, you know,
yep.
if you do anything you know, too much, or if your hair is, you know, unkempt, you're going
uh-huh.
against the grain or something, it's like, okay, you know, automatically as being a black person in general, we're going to be seen as a threat. But then you add
yeah.
on the misogyny and the stereotypes that they put on us as women, you know, in that we're lazy, you know, welfare. We have, you know, baby daddies. We're the downfall of the black community. You know, we have all of that hanging over us, and that's being pumped into people constantly. They
right.
The propaganda against us is amazing. And
yeah.
people don't
yep.
realize how it is that we're playing into that. But, you know,
yeah, you know what?
That's going to come along with deprogramming. But so long as that's going on, we have to combat all of that, and that we can't be pissed off that y'all are presenting us as being angry. You know, if you, I mean,
right,
have you
right.
ever been mad? Or, like,
you've been
upset. Let's say you're not
just,
upset, and someone keeps saying, why are you mad? Why are you mad? Why are you so damn mad? You're going to get fucking mad. Like, dude, leave me the fuck alone. It's a countrywide thing. It's a societal thing that we have to deal with every single day of our lives. And I don't think people understand what kind of I'm pretty sure that was planned, because everything that they do is very, very much so intentional. They play chess
so,
while we're still playing chess.
So listen, there was this this video that was going around with this show called, I forget what it is, but it's like, oh, it's Married at First Sight. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if y'all saw this clip, but there's this like this company that matches people, and they were, you know, doing like interviews of the people that they had to match up. And they interviewed all these black guys, and they were like, I don't date black women. And then they showed all these successful black women, and they were like, and then the white woman who was in the you know, the company spokesperson was like, well, we have all these black guys, but they don't want to date any of these white women, and they don't want to date any of these black women. They only want to date outside of their race. And then we have all these black women that only want to date within their race. And then, so it turns out, it turns out that mad people started commenting on that, saying they were turned away from the casting call, and they were successful black men that were only interested in black women, and they were told that they weren't needed.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was going to say, that sounds like propaganda. When
I didn't
see the clip, and you just told me the second part of it for the first time, but when I first
yep.
heard about it and I first saw, like, the, you know, Facebook post about it, I was like, you know what, this is straight-up propaganda. It's just another
mm-hmm.
tool that they're using to tell us that we're unwanted and we're
yep.
unprotected.
To teach black men to hate us.
Exactly.
You know,
right, absolutely. You know what, and now we're not going to pretend that they don't exist, because we do, because like I said on one of the threads we were talking about, that coons do coon loudly. They like to, you know, and tap dance and
but
show
the
little
but
white
the fact
girls.
Of the, but the fact of the matter is there were plenty of black men that showed up to be interested in black women, and they turned them away.
But by and
yeah.
large, statistics show that black people marry black people.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
we pretty stick together. Proximally, people who are around each other marry each other. Black folks pretty much stick together. That's the way that it works. So, yeah, you know, they always going to try and make us seem undesirable, even, and we'll highlight that we're educated. We'll highlight how beautiful we are and show how we still are low on the desirability totem pole in white supremacy patriarchy. They show the image of what it is that is desirable. You get you a white woman with a tan, get you a Kim Kardashian, that's what we want right there. We don't fit into that, so now we're way down there, and they're going to show, like, oh, look, even these black men, they don't want that. They don't want you, you know.
That's something to be angry about. All the dating, online dating data that has been collected since online dating shows that black women are the least desirable of all races when people are picking. That's across the board.
But you have to consider also who it is that's probably going to be doing the most with the online data. They can't say worldwide that black women are the least desirable when most of Africa
they're just talking about people that use. That's a good point to bring up because people don't realize that shit.
Black women are bad. I mean, really, seriously, black women, they talk about us. They will, you know, try to ridicule things about us, but at the same time, we are celebrated because there's no one else that's going to look like or be built like or, you know, just take over a room like a black woman. They know that.
That's true.
That's why,
that's why the propaganda is so important.
I call bullshit.
That's why they had us raising their babies.
Right. Yeah.
That's why they were taking us and making babies with us, because they saw they saw how beautiful we are. They couldn't resist themselves. Missionaries over into Africa, they made us cover ourselves up,
our hair,
our natural beauty, because it was too much for them. They couldn't take seeing us the way
laws were actually passed. Laws were actually passed right after the Civil War that made black women cover their hair, because our hair, we would do such amazing styles that they would catch the glimpses of white men, and the white women got pissed off. These suffragettes got pissed off, and they made up all these rules that what black women had to cover their hair, and that's why we have such a strong hair wrap culture in this country. Because so we weren't allowed to show our hair, so we started wrapping our heads with bright scarves and bright colors. Because we still wouldn't back down. We still needed to express ourselves, you know?
Yeah, that's one thing. Now, that's why that is a double-edged sword, being the strong black woman, because we are. We are very incredibly resilient. Through everything that they throw at us, we have always figured out a way to rise from it, how to get around it. They gave us scraps for food, we still made it good. You know what I'm saying? They made us cover our hair. We were still going to be flat. We are very incredibly resilient, but at the same time, we're human, and it's so hard when you're fighting against an entire culture that can't recognize your humanity like that. Because as a woman and as a black person, you know, we're just here, like we're entertainment, and it's pretty frustrating. And when it gets manifest in our own culture, then it's all the more frustrating. And when the men can't really see how it is that these things are directly affecting us with the misogynoir, and why it is that these things aren't acceptable, why we speak out against certain things that hurt us, and why it is that they're not responding. Because, like, something as simple as catcalling, they just won't hear us. It's like, it's a thing of, oh, you cool, whatever. Like, that ain't hurting you, man. That's not bothering you. When we are really specifically saying that, makes us uncomfortable. That's bothering us. There, you know, are real implications to people, you know, behaving this way. And, you know, it's something that we really need to address. We have to be much more vocal about. That's the only way that we're going to be able to, you know, get that message out to try and change behavior.
Exactly. And so these male allies, a way you can ally is, because the thing is I've been catcalled by groups of men, by men, mm-hmm. one guy in a group, and the other guy is kind of looking away or encouraging him. And that's the fucking problem, because people will be on these fucking Facebook groups saying how they go hard for black women, and then their boys, they're sitting outside on the stoop with their boys, and their fucking boys start catcalling some sister, and they don't fucking say shit to them. They just let that shit go, and that's why that shit perpetuates. So, you know, that's what I want to see for my brothers. That's what I want to see. I don't want to hear on Facebook that you got my back. I want to see it in the streets. That's what I want to see, you know?
Right. We had talked about that last week, Charlotte and I, where in a group of guys, there's a lot of social pressure to kind of, even if you don't co-sign that behavior, like not push back against it, not be the one that kind of spoils the fun. You really are making a decision for whatever group of guys you're in not to be allowed in that group when you speak up against them. I'm not saying that's a reason not to speak up. I'm just saying that's kind of one of the dynamics, you know, that you have to fight against.
I get it just the same way I get when fucking white people are with white people and they fucking say nigger or some shit and nobody says some shit. It's the same exact shit. So it's like, I understand that. It's obvious that that's what it is. But what I'm saying is I'm sick of hearing it as an excuse. Because it hurts women. It hurts black women especially.
And
if that was your sister or if that was your girl walking by, you'd say something. But if it's just some random sister, nobody says anything, you know? I'm not yelling at you. I'm just talking
because
I'm loud.
The point I was trying to make is that your impact becomes limited because once you're known as the guy that's going to speak up, you aren't welcome in the group. They don't bring you around. You know, you've ostracized yourself. So you kind of get some early chances to, you know, make your points and kind of advocate for, you know, better treatment of women overall, whether it's your sister or just the woman in the street. You know, become unpopular. You know, so you have to find a way to get that message out there consistently, you know, where they can't run from it, where they can't just kind of say, well, we're going to ignore that. I don't know if you're going to
sounds a lot to me like respectability, and I'm not down for that.
Yeah, and that's a whole other side now that you mentioned respectability, which I'm not sure that that's what that is, but since you mentioned respectability, that's kind of the other side of the whole, you know, misogynoir. Like, we're held as black women to this Western, you know, puritanical standards, a.k.a. respectability. And so if we don't fall into that, then guys have an out. You know, well, she shouldn't have been walking like this, or she shouldn't have worn this, or,
What I meant by respectability politics is what he was saying, we have to find a nice way to explain this to people.
He didn't say a nice way. He said a way to get it, the message consistently
Right. And I'm just saying, like, I just don't fuck with people. I'd be like, all right, I'm not cool with that. I'm not going to be around. I'm not going to be party to you doing that. I want to hang out. But if you're going to ostracize me for that, fine. I'll go fucking play PlayStation. It's over. I understand. That's what I'm saying about being revolutionary. You can't just, that's respectability. Saying, I want to hang out with them still because I'll be sad if I don't have friends because I stand up for women. And like, that's what I mean by respectability.
Right, but what he was saying that the person in the group that most likely would speak out would be kicked out of the group, and so now that group would no longer hear that message. And so now with us doing things like we are and spreading that message, these men who normally would kick out people outside of the group for being that, they can't run from the message. They'll hear the message because we're going to be constantly pressing it.
Men have to be ready to get kicked out of groups. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I wouldn't fuck with a white person that makes excuses for fucking racist slurs. I wouldn't.
No,
you know what I mean? If they came to us and they would be like, well, they're my friends and I can't get the message to them, if I'm not there to explain it to them. And, you know, but they only say it once in a while. They say nigger once, like, every two words. So it's not so bad. You know, like, that's what it sounds like to me. And I'm done with that shit. I'm not very popular, but whatever.
No, I'm not either. That's my point. Like, we sometimes run into these discussions in groups, and I have to be reminded that there are men like this out here because I have no friends like that. I don't have a lot of friends for that reason. But I specifically don't hang with people like that. And what that means is that I never get a chance to correct their behavior because they're never around me.
But I feel like people listen to this and people will hear people saying that. Like, they might be passing in the street and they might hear a guy stand up to a friend and they'll be like, holy shit, I'll think about that next time. And then that community of outcasts gets stronger and get the community themselves. And then those people, that's what I'm hoping for. Like, I'm not worried about those groups.
And the third part of that is... The third part of that is as parents, because I know I have kids. I know a couple of us on the call have kids. We have to start teaching our kids better, too. You know, we can't.
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely some people out there that you just got to cut them loose and be like, you know what, you don't want to learn about misogyny. You don't want to learn about misogynoir. You don't want to learn about, you know, patriarchy, whatever. Fine, bye. Mm-hmm. But we have a responsibility to at least start teaching our kids. You know, this is how you treat a human being. This is how you treat a person. You don't do that. You know, I have daughters and a son. So I'm looking at both sides of it, and it's not, you know, the messages that they talked about actually on the last episode, they talked about the messages and the differences between boys and girls and you know, boys get don't bring home any babies, I think Rashad said, and girls get – or. Yeah, don't bring them home, but don't, like, not do anything. Go have your fun. And girls get, you know, don't do anything. Don't bring home babies. Don't be caught out after 7. You know, all these different messages that they get growing up. And so we have to be cognizant of that, too. We can argue all day with grown people, and they may or may not change. Hopefully, you know, these episodes and these discussions help people change. But if they don't, at least we can help the next generation to not have as many of these issues.
Right.
Yeah, you know, like the way that I'm raising my daughter, it's really hard because her grandparents are heavily in her life. And, you know, patriarchy, people who grew up in, you know, 50s, 60s, you know, there's a certain order to things, so to speak, with them. And so it's really hard kind of trying to combat that because it's so cultural that people say things to little girls, you know, about, oh, you're going to be so, wait till you get married, or, you know, like it's really oppression to, you know, the whole princess, you know, dream wedding thing and, you know, buying, you know, cooking supplies and, you know, things, pushing them in that direction towards, you know, domestication, so to speak. And, you know, instead of prepping for, you know, other things that they might be interested in. When I was a little girl, I liked Legos. I liked racing cars. I liked to play basketball, but I also liked Barbies and stuff, you know. But I couldn't get the other side of that because those are boys' toys. And it's all so much, you know, pressure on little girls to only be these little, you know, princesses. And I don't want my it's kind of hard combating that when the entire society is kind of, you know, stirred around gender roles, which I don't think is fair.
I was very lucky.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I was just thinking about what you were saying with your experience. Mine was very different. My father was a Vietnam war hero, and he was a fireman. He was in at 9/11, actually, too. And he raised me playing sports, and I had a stepbrother who was a year older than me. And so I like cars and all sorts of wrestling and all sorts of shit. That I just grew up like what was called a tomboy. Which I don't like that phrase anymore, but so I was given all those opportunities, but I also like Barbies, not as much as I like, you know, the Army Rangers and shit like that, but because I could play with my brother with them and it was a lot more fun, you know, than Barbies for me. But, you know, and I hated dresses, but then, you know, when I became a teenager, I just gravitated towards that myself. So, like, I was never pressured one way or the other to be, you know, gendered, you know? But that's mm-hmm. that's yeah. I have to check my privilege on that because I you know a lot of like yourself have situations where you aren't given that freedom to choose, you know, to not mm-hmm. be so gendered.
Right. Absolutely. Right. You know, it's pretty interesting. Just like you said, it's growing up in that environment, and I know that was kind of my family is very, very country. They from Mississippi, you know, they're, you know, Southern hospitality. They had to be, it was a certain order to things. And they took us in the kitchen early to start learning how to cook and, you know, prepping us for what it is that we're supposed to do. Now, you watch grandma now because that's what you're going to be doing for your husband. I swear to God.
Oh, my God.
Like it was.
Oh, no.
It's so interesting.
Oh, no. You know, Jesus, no.
Yeah, oh, you know, and it's a certain way that you have to look. It's a certain way that you have to. There's so much policing on women's appearance. On black women, especially, we have to hide this and cover that and make sure that we're not showing too much because that ties into the catcalling. Going back to the catcalling, we need to define this because for some reason, some men think that catcalling is simply just, you know, flirting or showing their appreciation for a woman's beauty. That's not what that is. It's when you're on the street and it's someone and they're like, you know, just yelling things out at you possibly or trying to, you're, you know, not engaging them in any kind of way and, you know, sexual innuendo being shown, comments about your body and different things. These things are uncomfortable, especially in a culture like us where we have a very heavy rape culture. Where, like,
you know,
like, for instance, there was a video that was passed around on Facebook where there was a young lady, very beautiful young lady. She was in, like, a bodega little store, and she had on some gray leggings, and this jerk pulls out his phone, and the bastard starts recording her talking about, oh, look at your body. Look at her. Oh, you think.
Oh, my God.
And, he took her out the store to the point where she felt the need to run across the street. And he's telling her, like, what? Damn, it ain't that serious. Are you kidding me?
Like, yeah, I mean, so women have been killed in those situations. So it is that serious.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
some men, their fragility won't take rejection. And that rejection, the way that they lash out with that is through violence. And that has happened.
Yep.
And that's something we're aware of. And that's something that in addition to being black and having a target on our back from police and white people, we also have on our back as women. We have to be considered about all of these things all at once. And so,
and black women are considered disposable by society.
Right.
And everything is our fault. So if we go out and we're, you know, dressed that way or we have on leggings or what have you and somebody assaults us, then it becomes, well, she shouldn't have been wearing leggings or, well, she knew what she had before she walked out of the door. And it's, you know, there's no responsibility.
Yeah.
It's like Heather's saying, it's rape culture. There's no responsibility for men to stop raping. It's really that simple. Stop raping people. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the
raping.
Only crime where
matter.
It's the only crime where they describe the victim
telling you what to do to avoid being raped.
Exactly.
It's pretty disgusting.
It's, you know, it's not that they're blaming the victim. What they're saying is the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of perverted men out there that do rape and do a lot of the corrupt stuff. So the issue is like it's like if you know there's a danger out there, you should do your best not to put yourself in a position where you even allow yourself to be attacked. It's no different than if you go out to, let's say you go out to war.
Okay, wait, hold up. First of all, you can't start off a conversation on feminism as a man saying the issue is, because you don't know what the issue is. We're telling you what the issue is, and we're asking you to listen. So,
no, what
I need
what
you
I'm
to rethink
like,
that whole, No. I know what you're saying, and the issue is, that's not the issue, though. That's not the issue.
Well, I mean, what other issue
the
is
issue,
if...
The issue is that
men
need
to stop
raping people.
That's pretty
the issue
right,
is
then,
men
no,
need to
that,
stop
that,
feeling entitled.
That's my point.
Men need to not feel entitled to women, and that's what rape culture
is. That I agree with that. That's what the majority of our culture agrees with that. The problem is we have men who still do it, And the only reason that they don't is because they're afraid of the cops. So my point is that we are aware of that there's men out there who do those things. So as a woman who's aware that there's men who do that, you should try to be careful and try to guard yourself from that letting that happen. You know,
so
that's
that,
all I'm saying.
With that thought process, means we should not go to the movies anymore, right?
Listen, this is not the issue. The issue is men. And first of all, I don't see why you think you're telling us some shit we don't know. And like, are you educating us on how not to get raped right now, or are you gonna go and talk to your bros and tell them to stop fucking raping people? Because that's the message
Bro,
that should be coming out your mouth right now.
It's always a focus on telling women what not to do.
I can walk down the street in a bikini. A man shouldn't fucking feel entitled to talk to me or to touch me.
No, man.
That's the problem.
You fucked up with that one. Because, no, you just, that's victim blaming. Where you're telling someone that they got to, you know what I'm saying, that you have to...
This is a conversation about women for women. So you as a man should be listening. Should be listening to what we're saying to you, since we're the ones who are being oppressed. Just like if we were talking to white people and they were saying, well, the issue is, you know, you should all dress and talk properly and then the police wouldn't go after you. You would tell them to go fuck themselves right up their fucking white asses. So that's what I'm going to tell you right now. Sit down and listen, because that's some bullshit right there.
Who was the gentleman that spoke up and said that? Can you step forward? Because I needed to know who that was saying that we need to protect ourselves.
I'm not sure who said that or how they managed to get into the call, but I can assure you they have been removed. Now, what I want to say on
who,
that.
Wait, what?
Is, I say,
was
now,
that
what
just
I
some random person?
That, yes.
Was that just some random person?
That just broke into the broadcast, I know.
Oh,
hell
yeah,
no.
That was interesting.
Wait, no, so we got no.
Yo. I was like taking my fucking earrings off his shit, and I'm not even wearing earrings.
Yeah, that was.
But, what I wanted to say on rape culture is that.
That got me heated, yo.
In my experience, I have gotten a lot of contact with, like, I guess you could say pure uncut rape culture. Having to go through sexual assault awareness training now twice a year, being in the military where it's such a problem and there's really nothing being done to stop it. You know, guys get convicted and then their commanding officer has the power to reverse the ruling and they just get kicked out of the military with no repercussions whatsoever. And they can just go off and continue to be themselves and continue raping without being tracked. And you go into this training, and they say the same things every time. And at first when I got into the military, the training was less focused on the victim. And then they realized they were going in the wrong direction. It wasn't working. Numbers were going up. Now it's focused on the attacker. Even with that, there's still no sea change in the perception of sexual assault. Like, I'm sitting in these trainings, and I watch these guys go, well, same thing. Well, she was wearing that dress, or she was wearing those tight jeans, or the leggings, or whatever. And, yeah, he raped her, but she wouldn't have got raped if she hadn't gotten,
bullshit.
You know, completely wasted. And it's like, you don't understand. She could be wasted, butt naked, and have, like, fuck me written in lipstick on her chest, but that still doesn't give you the permission to rape her. And it blows my mind that even though time and time again I see this in the training, that it never really gets addressed, and they keep just saying, focus on the assailant, and now I'm thinking, you know, that's the wrong focus too. Now we need to focus on the mindset, the mindset that creates this permissive culture that allows people to basically get away with this time and time again. Because these guys, I deal with people who are in like a holding pattern waiting to go to their next stage in training. And I've heard stories of, we had this guy who was creeping around trying to peek in windows, and nothing happened to this guy, even though there was 20 girls who were ready to give written statements and say this guy was doing it. Yes, yes. And it blows my mind. And these people are going out into the military. None of this stuff is written down. None of this is on the record. And they can just continue to do it.
Yeah, that's
and,
messed
and then,
up.
And then they sexually, and they're not... they sexually assault someone. And then they go to trial. They get found guilty. And then the CO goes, you know what? Nah, he ain't guilty.
Oh, I've heard so many different stories about the military going overseas, raping people, men, women, and children. So I have no doubt about it. If it's someone that, you know, can just go kill it, will, I'm really not convinced that they can't do a lot more. No.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I don't date military. Like, I just don't. I don't. It's too risky.
I can't.
Especially
but,
like
know,
white dudes in military suits, they might as well be Ku Klux Klan to me. I can't. I don't find them attractive.
I'm sorry, but I have a hard time taking a hood off of any white person, but that's just me. But I wanted to touch real quick. We were talking about the gender with the children and the toys and everything. I think that something else that we need to be conscious of as being progressive black people is that, you know, we are raising children that possibly could be trans. They might not be what it is that they were assigned at birth. So for us forcing them to go in a certain direction of having to put on all the pink stuff and having to put on, you know, have to go and play with the little vacuum. And, man, girls' toys piss me off. If you go down the girls' aisle of the toys, it's so much domestic house cleaning and ironing boards and shit.
Oh, I know.
You know.
Right.
You know, so
and
you people
that
you know,
way sometimes.
Yeah.
It's
really, you know,
too.
So. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, it's important you're right. It's super important to let the child guide what they want to do. I have two daughters. One is not into anything that's traditionally thought of as feminine. The other is the girliest girl that you could ever imagine. But she still likes, you know, playing Legos with her brother and sister and stuff like that. And the thing is, you have to let them be the guide of who they are, you know. You have to listen to their cues. You have to take them to the store with you, you know, let them pick out what they want to wear and things like that, because kids know pretty early on who they are. There was some psychological study years ago where it was said that children's personalities are pretty much set at the age of 6. So after that, they're pretty much just who they are. You know, you're not going to have this whole, you know, big change, or, oh, no, I'm going to make you this or make you that. And I have this argument with my mother, actually, all the time, because my older daughter, my mother's very old school, you know, in Texas and everything, and, oh, you need to do something with her hair. Oh, you need to get her some nice blouses. Oh, you need to do this. And I'm like, so what? She's not going to wear something that she doesn't want to wear. You know, she is who she is. And if you can accept her for who she is, then all the better for you. If you can't, oh, well, you're just not going to see her very often.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, I have a 17-year-old, and my mother is a born-again Baptist, Southern Baptist Christian, and she's a mess.
Mine too.
And, oh, my gosh, she went full throttle. Like, I was raised secular. My father was Catholic, and I had to go to, like, CCD and shit, but nobody took any of that shit seriously, so it wasn't a big deal. But then, like, when I rebelled when I was, like, 17, I got, like, pregnant, and I was with a boyfriend who sold drugs and shit. It was crazy. And and she went, like, full Baptist, and she just went full-blown crazy because she felt out of control, and so I know why she got drawn to it. So it helped her get control of what she thought was control or whatever. But really, it was just a platform for her to be more self-righteous, you know? And But with my daughter, she would like my daughter developed really young and had really big boobs, really, really big boobs. And my mom would always like, you need to cover that up and that's too tight and blah, blah. And I would be like, you need to stop telling her what to wear and you need to stop talking about her body because that's none of your business. You know, I'd have to check her and it would make my daughter feel really uncomfortable and you know, give her self-esteem issues. And I had to shut her down several times and be like, you cannot make those comments to my daughter anymore. It's just no. She's fine. Those are boobs. Mm-hmm. It's not going to kill anybody. You know, and then going to school when she's wearing yoga pants or where she got sent home for something. And when I was on my way to pick her up, some white girl walked by with some mini, mini shorts, and I was like, I went full out. I was pissed. So as black mothers, as black fathers, we got to go hard for our kids and make sure that in all realms of society, they know we're there for them and we're constantly reinforcing them that they have nothing to be ashamed of with their bodies and that it's, you know, that they feel comfortable being who they are.
Exactly. Right, that's what I'm going to say. It creates a real shame with your body. You know, like, how is a little girl supposed to feel about her body when you're constantly telling her, cover it up? You know, like, it's bad, making them feel like something that's a natural part of, you know, the benefits of being a woman. I love my body, you know, and, you know, it's not teaching them to love it, we're teaching them to tell them about it, you know? No, we have to consider that. And then the misogynoir part about it, like you said, you know, because we have butts and we have hips, we need to cover that up. With our hair, we need to straighten it. You don't need to have it all nappy all over your head. I deal with that with my mother. That's a constant fight in my house.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
It's pretty hard, you know, with, you know, growing up with little girls trying to be themselves and, you know, figure out who it is that they are as a person when we've been programmed and society has been programmed to tell us that we have to fit into these cookie cutters. And, you know, I'm hoping that eventually the more that we talk about these things and the more discussion that we have, we can start breaking down these molds and these walls and parameters that these people are trying to place all of us in so that we can actually, you know, explore where our humanity can go. Because so far with all of this suppression from so many different places, we don't know exactly what all of our capabilities are as black women, as humans, period, when we have so many different people that are telling us we have to be certain ways and we're not, and when we go outside of that, we're punished. So
exactly.
Hopefully this dialogue that, you know, us being more vocal and more present and in the forefront, we can start changing this because, you know, things need to change that are specific to us. We want all black people from under oppression, but we need people to understand that there are specific things that we deal with as black women, and in order for all of us to be free, we have to make sure that we are all free. Not, you know, so yeah, we'll get that. I'm hoping that we can get there eventually.
Definitely. And when you say all, I'd be remiss. I wanted to, and obviously we're not going to get into this deeply this episode, but I think it's really important to remember we also have, in all black women, our trans black women, their life expectancy, I believe, is age 35. I believe. I could totally be wrong on that number, but it's very, very young. And they are, you know, fighting for their rights as well. We're all in this together, and we all have to make sure that, you know, we're our sister's keeper. Because, there's not a lot of people looking out for us, so we have to look out for each other, and we have to keep having these conversations so that other people
I think on top of that, as secular and atheist, as, you know, secular and atheist black folk, we have to address the issue of homophobia in our communities, too. You know, like, and that's religious, you know, that comes in the church, and that comes with that stuff, and that's got to change, you know? That's the hardest part for me.
We definitely need a show about the impact of religion on the black community, because it's a heavy impact. They press that on us very, very heavy.
Right.
And it's that heavy.
Just here in Houston, I'm a few miles north of Houston, but just here in the area, the past, like last month, we had a Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, and there was an unholy alliance, what I call it, between the anti, the homophobic white people, basically, and black pastors, because there's so much homophobia in the black church that they were able to bamboozle the black pastors into not supporting this ordinance. And literally an equal rights ordinance, because they made it about trans persons going into a bathroom. And so these pastors, where the overwhelming majority of discrimination in Houston is racial, I believe it's like 56%, but these pastors got up and told their congregants to vote against this ordinance because of trans people going to the bathroom. I mean, literally.
Right.
They shot themselves in the foot, and they were...
So what people don't understand about this issue is this is a feminist issue. This is an issue about patriarchy, and this is an issue about hyper-masculinity and fragility of that masculinity. If those things didn't exist, this wouldn't be a problem. It wouldn't be a problem. It's a problem because of the patriarchy, and that this is why, you know, that has to be understood, and this is why feminism and womanism is so important. Because that's exactly the problem. It's not the women that are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a problem with men who feel like their masculinity is somehow compromised by LGBTQA people. And, you know, that's what the problem is. And that's something that was taught to us. That's not African. That's not who we are. It was taught to us. And right now, the fucking white people, rich white Southerners, are in Africa right now pumping money into these people, trying to convince them to make, you know, anti-homophobic laws, laws against gay people and gay marriage. They're sending all their money there in our country, on our continent, trying to turn us into what they are. That's something that they invented, you know, and I think that as black feminists and womanists, we have to address that on that level.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I 100% believe that homophobia was completely a part of colonialism, you know, because we just are more empathetic and culturally accepting of people, typically, that, you know, white culture, Europeans have always been the most oppressive and unaccepting and intolerant of any culture. Whenever anything is any kind of way that they deem different in any sort of way, it threatens them, and they directly goes against it, you know. So whereas we're mutable people, we're adaptable, you know, we're more understanding, we try to understand people. That's one of the reasons why I believe we're still in this fight, because we have such strong empathy, whereas they don't have any. I really do believe that we were taught that, and we really do have to fight against that. But that also, like, it comes so deeply with religion, because when you have someone's idea of God wrapped behind that, then they're really, you know, you have to break that down first, I believe. Because, I mean, you have gay people in church. You have people who are gay in church loathing themselves because they're anticipating a burning hell.
We really just need to abolish white Jesus.
I've seen that personally. I'm sure we all have, but, you know, the being in church, and, you know, I have family members that have been gay as long as I've known it, as long as I've been alive, you know, probably before then. But they will sit across from a table from me and tell me, you know, you just need to wait on God to bring you a good man. I'm like, I kind of want to be snarky and say, you waiting on God to bring you a good man too? But, you know, it's so ingrained. I don't understand what kind of emotional damage is done to a person that is in a religion and is constantly telling them, or in a religion that is constantly telling them that they are an abomination. You know, I want to be a Christian. Well, yeah, I was in religion too. You know, I've been free from religion for about 4 years now, and I remember how hard it was for me just, you know, fornicating. I mean, there were times when I was, you know, out or enjoying myself and at the same time going, Lord, forgive me. I'm so sorry. Lord, forgive me. The flesh is weak, you know.
Oh, my God. That's so terrible.
Yeah.
I was never in that deep. I've broken down in tears afterwards before because I'm like, I don't know why I can't stop doing this. Why can't I stop being like this? Get this. I was a youth minister. There was a team of us. And one of the girls that I was very close to that, you know, like I worked with, she was also a youth minister. It became very hard for me when I became very attracted to her. That was very awkward. She was very handsy. So that was quite different. That's pretty hard to be in something and be preaching something that's telling you the way that you feel something that's very natural to you is, you know, completely an abomination. Or like when you have the girls that would come and maybe they might be gender nonconforming. And they have on, you know, might just have on baggy jeans and a shirt and not really looking like girls. And you have the older women come up to them and tell them, why are you dressing like that? You need to look more like a girl. You're starting to look like a boy. What, you gay or something? You know,
right. And I heard that a lot.
Wow. No, I don't know all about that. I grew up in Brooklyn. That's a totally different world.
I was deep in the Pentecostal church, and I don't know, and just pretty much though, it wasn't even just so much in church, just in general, in a lot of households, that would be the question, because when I was in my teens, I went through a phase of where I didn't want to wear girls' clothes. I shopped in the men's section. That's what I liked. Uh-huh. That's what I wanted.
Well, TLC, you know.
My mom, what? You know what? That probably has something to do with
it. It was TLC, but, me too.
So, you know, but the question
it was Saw and Pepper.
Right. It became to a point where, you know, I do like to dress up. I like high heels and stuff now, but I kind of had to force myself into it because, to me, I was starting to show myself. And, it was being more apparent. I wasn't really worried about boys. I didn't really care or whatever, and I was starting to dress kind of boyish. So, you know, you have the social stigma of possibly being a lesbian or something like that. It's so fucking much that you have to deal with being, especially being a part of the LGBT community and being a Black woman. That's just, that's not you know, an easy thing to try and balance. It's so much about, so you have the, you can't be angry. You're automatically going to be stereotyped. You're going to be loud. You got to speak softly. You got to dress like a girl, act like a girl. It's so much pressure on us, and you know it comes from birth, and we're born into that. And I don't want to see, you know, my granddaughters and everyone going through that. We need to end this shit. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right. Speaking of, I have if you guys don't mind, there's something that happened to me actually a week ago, and I'd love to get your thoughts on that. I wrote about it on the blog, so you guys may or may not have seen it, but to try to make a long story a little shorter, there was this guy that was basically harassing me through emails. I was on the board of an organization here in the area for Black secularists, Black nonbelievers, and there was this white guy that, you know, was a part of it for a while and then, you know,
had
some issues.
Of course.
Right. And, you know,
it had to be up in there.
Right. I ended up telling him about 9 months ago that, you know, look, if you want to be an ally, they want you to be here, fine, whatever, but this is how you do it. You don't come in here and you don't try to take over our space. So I even wrote a blog post about that. So he was not happy about that. So 9 months later, he pops up again and starts emailing everybody on the board and saying how I owe him an apology and how I showed my ass and all these different things. And so I finally go to the board and I said, look, number one, nobody's going to just pop up again you know, after all that time, yes, this man is crazy, but nobody's going to just pop up. Who's out there asking this person to come back? Because we've had, and that's a whole other discussion, trying to have people in our spaces running things. But I was like, number one, who's asking this person to come back? Whoever's doing that doesn't give a damn about me because I've already told you he is obsessed, he's upset, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we have to have a whole meeting about it, and the title of the piece actually was Misogynoir and Invalidation, because during this conversation with the other members, with this person not there anymore or anything like that, it was questions of, well, why do you feel this way? Well, why do you feel
what?
Like you're unsafe? Because I literally said, I do not feel safe with this person around. Why would you ask him to come back? He's been gone for all this time. Why would you do that?
And who asked him to come back?
One of the other board members asked him to come back. I found out later.
A black person?
Which is why the email. Yeah, which is why
a
the
black
email
person?
Started again. Yes, a black man.
Oh,
a black man.
And
older
it,
black
Uncle Ruckus motherfucker.
So, during the course of this conversation, you know, I'm having
does he have like does he have like 10 jobs? Does he wear like 10 different hats? Is his name Ruckus?
Not quite, but you know, he has one.
Gotta make space for the white man.
Exactly. And I don't know if it's because, well, that's a whole other story. So here's the biggest point of this thing that just really, really sent me off, and I quit the board and all that other thing. This man who had been going behind us and asking, you know, this person to come back or come back, whatever, he looks at the other woman on the board at the time. There was two women and three men in the room, two black women, three black men in the room. He looks at the other black woman in the room and says, so let me ask you, as a woman, using those terms, how would you feel about this? And I stopped him right then and there, because that is invalidation. You should not have to ask another woman how she would feel in a certain situation. If I look at you and I tell you, this scares me. You've seen the emails because he CC'd everybody. You've seen this. I'm looking at you and I'm telling you, this is concerning. That should be all it takes, right?
Right.
Yeah, no, I don't understand. I don't even understand why they convened like a whole fucking meeting for this bullshit. Like, what
exactly.
The fuck? And this is an example of fucking black men not standing up and just being like, nah, it's over. Like, she does not feel uncomfortable. It's a white dude on top of it. Get the fuck out of here.
Right.
Like, no.
Right. It was,
you
it
shouldn't
was
have
very...
even had to explain it twice.
Exactly. That's how I felt about it. And that's the thing that...
Forward
you know,
the one email,
happened.
And that's all it should have taken. Yeah.
Right. Because I'm actually in another group as well that's more, you know, multicultural. I walked into that group and someone asked me, hey, are you still getting emails from such and such? And I said, yeah, and it, you know, it's pretty bad because it's the same day. That person said, oh, let me make sure he's on the ban list. Period. The end. There was no discussion.
Right.
There was no, how do you feel about it? There was, let me pull up this ban list and make sure that if he shows up to any of our functions, he will be promptly turned away. Period. The end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
how
that was supposed to be taken care of.
Yeah. It's not that hard.
Absolutely.
I don't understand.
Like,
somebody's not safe, they're not safe. That's your board member. That's your partner. Get the fuck out of here. Fuck all of them.
Right. And it feels like as black women, we have to sit here and explain to people why we feel that way. Because, again, it goes back to the strong black woman. And someone in that meeting actually said also, well, you know, I can kind of understand him being upset because when Deanna breaks something down, she really breaks it down. So I can kind of understand, you know, it doesn't make it okay, but I can kind of, so that's victim blaming. Don't do that. Yeah.
Right.
Just so everyone listening knows, don't do that.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
I'd like to hear some feedback from the... from our masculine friends.
Well, I don't even know where to start. I've just been sitting back listening and learning. I mean, as somebody who calls himself an ally, I feel like that's really all I can do is, you know, sit back, listen, learn, and as one of my friends likes to put it, be hero support. So, you know, I stay in the background, pop up when I need it, and then when I'm done, I'm gone.
And that's pretty good. I like that in you. Like, we don't need you to come forward.
It's definitely a good start.
You know,
definitely a good start.
I don't want to be one of those guys that's like, well, let me tell you how this really goes. Or the issue is, I don't want to be
because he already saw what happened. He already saw.
Oh, right. That doesn't go well.
I know my day is coming when I trip up and I'm going to get dragged. I'm going to get red to filth. And I'm going to just have to learn from that and keep on moving and hopefully not be that guy that tries to defend the fuckery. So
yeah, that's all you can ask up for, you know, really it is. Just try not to get up in your feelings when it happens, because that's what gets people fucked up. It gets the ego gets, like, out of proportions. It's like, it's not that serious. It really isn't.
Yeah.
It'll be over soon.
Yeah. What are some other solutions? Because I hate having long conversations about one thing, and then you get to the end of it, and you don't know any different than, you know, what you started with. You know that there's an issue, but nobody ever talked about solutions. So what are some solutions? I know we talked about, you know, raising kids better. We talked about talking about it, for first of all, getting the word out and being open. What are some other things that you guys think we can do to start changing this dynamic?
I mentioned on our previous show that we should do something like To Catch a Predator, only it's To Catch a Catcaller. And, you know, we just sit off in the cut. You know, we find us a beautiful woman and dress her up real nice and have her walk around the mall and make, you know, busy street or something, and
but the thing
know,
is, you don't even have to be dressed up
and,
that nice.
No,
you need to be wearing fucking a sweatshirt and yoga pants.
You're right, though. You're right.
I mean,
because old girl in the video, she was wearing what? Black jeans.
She
had on
I work one block away from my garage where I park my car. I'm on my way into work, and on my way back, I get catcalled at least 2 times a day.
Wow.
Yeah. But I mean,
and it's winter up
here.
I'm wearing, like, a long jacket, you know?
If I can do it myself, I might have to. I might have to be the black Chris Hansen, you know?
Right. I had on pajama pants and a hoodie. I just went to the gas station, and this dude, as I was about to go in, walked out, and he's going to his van, and he spoke to me. I ignored him and kept on going. And do you know this fool made sure to announce to me, I'll be out here when you come out?
Oh,
that's
no.
Wow.
That's
and
that's acceptable, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, men don't understand that that's not the way that you respond to a woman's, you know, like, ignoring your advances. That's some creepy-ass shit. You by the door in a van. What I look like. That's too much. So,
right.
And I bet you he thought that was nice. So these men, you guys gotta. I do believe, just like I think, like with racism, I don't think we're gonna change white people's mind about racism too much. They ain't never tried to fix it at any other point. I believe that it's white people's job to talk to white people about not being racist. I think it's gonna be on men to talk to other men about not being misogynistic and
catcalling.
I'm putting that burden on y'all, but that know better, the ones that know that this shit is a detriment to us, to go and speak to your brothers. Y'all be in the barbershop. If niggas get mad when you come there, I mean, you already in a chair. The dude want his $20. While you there, go ahead and tell him for a second. They'll be mad. But at least, you know, it's people that are dying over this. There are women that get killed, that get raped. There is an actual detriment to it.
Yeah.
It's not just someone complimenting you thinking that you're pretty. It's about that we have to be concerned about our lives. And if you
right,
value
you
the
know.
Lives of your sisters, you'll go ahead and you'll do this for us.
Yep. And any,
exactly.
like, encouragement against violence against women, I mean, I hear conversations go on all the time. I mean, the shit in my inbox on my online dating accounts, it's vile. Like, as soon as there's rejection, men get violent in words. So
mm-hmm.
can you imagine what they're like in real life? Like, this is why we're, this is, it's scary. It's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
and the only way it's going to stop is if other men talk to men and say, don't cut that shit out. Like, I don't want to hear you. I don't want to find out that you laid hands on one of our sisters.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
It shouldn't be up
if
to their brother or their
you,
father.
Take it.
It should be your boy. It should be like, you're not hitting her, are you? Because I will have to come in there and knock you around. Like, you know, that there's it's not, you have to start minding other people's business because of people's lives are at risk. And you know, it's like it's just you're on a constant episode of what would you do, you know? To
mm-hmm.
do the right thing.
Yep.
But, I mean, there was a situation I had. It was, like, summertime, and I was outside with my white guy friend, and we were at a bar that had a patio outside on a busy avenue where people walk by, and there was, like, a festival going on, so there was a lot of traffic, and people were dressed up. And we're sitting there having a beer, and there's a table next to us that's, like, surrounded with, like, six or seven guys drinking pitchers of beer. And there's this one fucking fat white guy who's just fucking standing up and, like, spilling beer all over and just talking loudly. And every single time a woman walked by, he was saying, like, oh, my God, you look good in that dress. It looked better on my floor, blah, blah, blah. And, like, every single woman.
Oh, God.
The third woman who walked by, and I'm sitting there, and my friend is there who does, this is actually was the co-host. He's sitting there, he hears it, and all of the friends were kind of, like, you know, groaning and kind of nervous laughing but not encouraging him but not saying anything either. And then so
right.
finally, a Latina woman walks by and he does it to her. And I was like, that was my, it was, because he called her mommy. And that was my last straw. And I stood up and I was like, if you don't fucking sit down and shut the fuck up, I'm going to shove that beer pitcher right up your fucking ass. I'm sitting here drinking, enjoying my beer. And all I hear is you fucking catcalling women. You need to shut the fuck up. And his friends were like, yeah, we don't know why he's doing it. I'm like, you all need to shut the fuck up too. Because none of y'all stood up and said something while he harassed those three women that just walked by. So all of you are just as guilty. So don't even fucking talk to me like you're on my side on this shit. It's like, check your fucking
right.
boy. And then they fucking were like, yeah, you need to go away, finally. And
right.
like, I thought he was going to pee in his pants because I got up and I was like, if you don't, oh, I said to him, I was like, do you understand what I'm saying to you, yes or no? And he was like, I was like, yes or no? And he was like, yes. I was like, all right, now shut the fuck up and get out of my face. And then he walked away. But, like, nobody was going to say anything. And I had to say something. I'm a woman. I, like, you know, those women, they were scared. They walked by. They weren't laughing. They were nervous. And there was, because there was a group of guys there. It was menacing, you know. And it was just, like, they were so uncomfortable. And I had to say something. There were all these men, including my male friend, who could have said something before I even had to. And they none of them did. And that's why I don't fucking believe in male allies. You know. When I start seeing men fucking step up and say something before I start to say something, and I'm quick to say some shit. When they're quicker than I am, that's when I'll believe in male allies, that they're serious about making changes.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. Yeah, I'm not too quick to give allyship to anyone just based off of lip service. It's people that, you know, that are consistent with things that I would consider to be an ally. In the case of white people, I don't believe in allies. But, like, as far as for all, with, you know, black men, because of the fact that we are all black people and, you know, we are seeking, you know, for us to be unified, you know, that's something that, you know, they try to present feminists as that we're trying to down the black community and all of this shit. No, it's not. We're just trying to get us all on a level playing field so that we're all on the same page and we're not hurting each other. And, you know, I'm not going to be quick to call a black man no ally. You know, we can't be so quick to look for it until we can get this system starting to break down. And, you know, they're showing improving their usefulness in the fight, then we can say it. But for right now,
I just think I think as women, I think as Black people, whoever's struggling and whoever's fighting a fight, we need to get out of the habit of giving people titles. Like, that's not what it's about. It's not about them. It really isn't about them. You know, they either are about the movement or not. They don't need a title to do the right thing. That's how I feel about it. Like I'll describe a situation as allying, but I'm done giving people the title of ally. I just think it sets you up for disappointment, and it gives them a false sense of that they're centered and that it's about them in some way, and it's not. It's about people doing the right thing, and that's like the bare minimum. You know.
Right.
Being an ally is basically being the bare minimum. So if you want to celebrate being mediocre, then fine. But that's not what it's about. And we, as in our movements, we need to stop centering, the people who are oppressing us. They need to check each other and do what they need to do and stop making it about them and what they're doing. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. True.
So I know there's dudes out there that's doing their thing and they're doing good stuff, but they don't. There's just as many women who are fighting and dying and struggling, and that's who I'm going to celebrate, and that's who I'm going to label a feminist. You know, that's who I'm going to give a title to.
Yeah. And they, like we said earlier, they need to talk to each other. You know, just like white people need to talk to each other, like men
mm-hmm.
need to talk to each other, and men in general need to talk to each other. So, you know, that's just part of being human. That's what you need to do.
Yeah, and like what these brothers here are doing, sitting and listening to us guiding this conversation, that's allying. You know, that's what I'm talking about. You know, this platform.
Something that we need to also do is address the rape culture and a lot of things. I believe with a lot of things that we deal with, perspective is a huge problem. We need to try to, you know, make moves towards shifting away from victim blaming, because that's something that always comes into play with different offenses against us as Black women. We're going to have to figure out a way to change that conversation completely, because that's part of what helps to keep this going, is that, you know, we just go along with, you know, the regular narrative, and that's a huge mm-hmm. part of the proponents that keeps this propelled along.
And that's something we can all do, because I know I've been in different groups where, you know, there's women who subscribe to the respectability politics as well. And they'll say, well, you know, I'm not, just like the guy that popped in, you know, well, I'm not saying that he should have done this, but we know that those guys are out there. So, you know, she should have been aware of her surroundings, or she should have been doing this. And I stopped them, you know, and we should all do that. We should all stop them and say, no, the bottom line is he should not have raped her, you know. Period.
Yeah, no, that's why you got to shut that down. Yeah. Shut that shit down.
Yeah.
They can't be a platform for that.
Right. There was a, I can't remember, it was an article a few months ago, I think, about a woman that was, she had met someone on Facebook and invited him over, and he ended up killing her. And so in one of my groups, the women were, you know, yeah, girl, and these women find these guys on there, and, you know, that's just crazy, you know, and I go in and say, no, he shouldn't have killed her, you know, that's just it.
Yeah.
And they continue on, and there's this whole thread about, well, you know, I know people that meet each other on Facebook, and that's just crazy. And so then again, I'm like, just so you know, I met my boyfriend on Facebook, and... I'm crazy too, you know. I guess I'm insane, whatever. But the point is, we have to keep saying it out loud. We have to keep calling people to the carpet when they say these things.
Speak truth to power.
Right.
You know,
so,
we have to do it in the Black struggle. We have to do it in the womanist struggle. You got to speak truth to power. You got to, you know, set your boundaries and standards and make sure people don't, you know, push them. Because you deserve to, you are entitled to your autonomy, and they're not entitled to it, you know.
Exactly. And murderers should stop murdering, and rapists should stop raping.
Yeah.
The end. Absolutely.
The end.
Absolutely. I think that's a good note to end on right there. But before we go, I just want to add a quick note. I'm going to try and do this at the end of every show. But since our last episode, 14 people have been killed by police. Since our last episode. The last week, 14 people. That's 31 people since this show has started.
Wow.
We're only on episode three. Episode 3, and there's been 31 people killed by police since we started. But this is the Black Atheist Radio Show, also known as Bars. On behalf of Sapio, Heather, Khalil, Deanna, I'm Rashad Blazer Pete. And until next time, stay black, keep pushing.
Peace.
Peace.
Thank you.
Rest in power.